This episode of the No Film School podcast is brought to you by Vimeo Live. Hey everybody, this is John Fusco, and you're listening to the No Film School podcast. Have you ever been at one of those parties where people are talking about these movies and then Hitchcock comes up, but you've never seen any Hitchcock, so then you get all sweaty and start avoiding people's gaze, and it feels like everyone is watching you and the world is slowly closing in on you, and you get so claustrophobic and insane that you feel like you want to scream? Me neither. Funnily enough, the experience of watching Psycho for the first time feels exactly the same way. So now that I've prepared you on what you're in for, it's time to stop making excuses and just watch it, right now, after you've listened to this podcast. And before you go see Alexander Philippe's illuminating documentary, 7852. The doc defies the convention of looking back in retrospect at an entire filmmaker's career, and even goes more in depth than simply covering one film. Instead, Philippe focuses on one scene, Psycho's infamous shower scene that had 78 camera setups, 52 cuts, and took 7 days to shoot. In many ways, examining this one scene provides us with more than enough information on Hitchcock's career than would be necessary to keep up in one of these terrifying cinephile conversations. I sat down with Philippe to discuss Hitchcock's legacy, what Psycho has to say about his tendencies as a filmmaker, and plenty more interesting facts to place you firmly in the realm of Hitchcock expert. Hey everybody, I am here with Alexander, is that
Alexander? That's fine.
How do I pronounce your last name?
It's really Alexandre, but okay. You know, it's Alexander Philippe. Yeah, okay,
yeah. The bastardized American version. And we're going to talk about his new film 7852, and we're going to talk probably a lot about Psycho and a lot about Hitchcock, which I'm very excited about. Having actually just like 3 weeks ago, I went on a Hitchcock binge. Because I'm making my own short in November, and I was like trying to pick up on tropes and stuff that he would use throughout each. So I watched Psycho, The Birds, Rear Window, Vertigo, and North by Northwest, all nice. In like a week.
Nice.
I guess what my first question is why did you choose to make a documentary about Psycho?
Well, I mean, it's really a documentary about the shower scene.
Sure.
You know, it's very, very specific. And you know, it's just really one of those extraordinary pieces of work that needed it really deserved, I think, a cinematic treatment, mm-hmm. You know, and it's really the most incredible 2 minutes in the history of movies. I mean, you can just study this, you know, for the rest of your life and then never get to the bottom of it. So it's pretty spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Why choose to focus on the shower scene versus the entire film as a whole?
You know, I really like this idea of sort of focusing on a fragment to get a better sense of the whole. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the shower scene in a way sort of contains all of Hitchcock. Mm-hmm. You know, you can really look at all of his sort of fears, obsessions, you know, preoccupations as an mm-hmm. artist, you know, by looking at the shower scene. So by really looking at that scene, I think it's a way to look at Psycho and it, you know, then it's a way to look at Hitchcock and look at his craft and then to also have larger discussions about cinema, mm-hmm. you know.
So what are some of those specific sort of neuroses of Hitchcock that we can see in that scene?
Well, I mean, I think you really see, for me, you see in this scene the sort of Hitchcock's moral universe, mm-hmm. You know, in a nutshell, you know, this idea that, you know, horrible things can happen to good people for no good reason at any moment, mm-hmm. you know, and you see that in The Birds, you know, as well. I think, you know, you can look at Psycho and The Birds as sort of companion pieces, you know, of sorts. And it's a very upsetting idea. It's really something that clearly upset audiences at the time. You know, nobody had ever sort of killed off a major movie star like this, you know, 40 minutes into the film. You mm-hmm. know, it just wasn't done. So I think it's really revealing of I think, a profound fear in Hitchcock that, you know, there might not be a God. There might not be a rhyme or reason to all of this thing called life.
Right, because even after she makes one of the things that I found fascinating that you pointed out is, you know, the scene before where she is meeting with Norman for the first time in their, I guess it's the little office next to her room, and she's made the decision to take this money that she stole back at that point, right? And you'd think that, I think audiences would think in, at that period of time, that this was going to be her sort of her resolution and things would start to go well for her. But Hitchcock really changed convention in that way. What are some other ways that this scene changed film conventions for good, really?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, obviously the editing, you know, is something that is still studied in film school.
Right.
You know, and it really created, I think, in many ways, a new kind of cinematic language. You know, as Walter Murch says in the film, audiences at the time were not used to seeing, you know, this kind of editing. So as a result of that, they started sort of connecting the dots and thought they saw nudity and thought they saw violence that really wasn't on screen. It also, you know, broke a number of taboos. You know, it was the first time you would see a toilet flushing on screen and the first belly button and yeah. The first time you would see a major movie star, you know, in her underwear post-coitus, you know, lying horizontally on a bed. You know, things like that, I think, were completely revolutionary. And then it also changed the way that that we watch movies, you know, because of Psycho, we are now lining up, you know, to go see a movie. You know, before that, people were walking in and out of the theater. So it was the marketing of Psycho that kind of changed that.
Can we talk about the marketing a little bit? Because you have these snippets of, I guess it was his marketing campaign, Hitchcock's marketing campaign, which is really something that we don't see directors do anymore these days, but kind of taking the audience through a tour of the film itself as this persona. There's not really been any other director since Hitchcock to do that. What exactly would he do in the run-up to a film like Psycho or a film like North by Northwest?
Well, I mean, you know, the thing that was unique about Psycho is that, you know, he wanted to make sure that nobody would be able to just walk in the middle of a film, which was the ritual at the time. People would walk in and out of movies, you know. You'd walk in the middle, you'd watch the end, you'd stay, watch the movie start again, and then when you get to the point where, you know, you entered, you would leave, you know. Well, just imagine doing this with the shower scene. You walk in during the shower scene, it's, you know, you're completely missing the whole point of the film. So the marketing ploy was basically, I think, to protect the integrity of the, you know, the shock of the shower scene. And it was basically that, you know, you will not be allowed to walk into the theater once the movie begins. And so it really sort of created a whole anticipation around the film. And I think, you know, like I said earlier, I think people started lining up to, you know, to make sure they would catch the movie and, you know, from the beginning. And so it wasn't just a marketing ploy, but it really created anticipation at a high pitch.
There's already like suspense built up in the audience before they even went into the theater, which is
completely,
something, yeah, just brilliant.
Yeah.
What are some other of Hitchcock's sort of trademark suspense tactics that really built up to the shower scene that made it so effective?
I think the shower scene and Psycho as a whole is probably the most refined sort of form of, you know, suspense that Hitchcock had developed up until that day. You know, we talk a lot about the fact that it is a shock. It's unexpected, which it is. But I think you can absolutely make the argument that by watching Psycho, you are in essence, there are certain signifiers that make you feel like something bad is going to happen. It's foreshadowed in a very, very, you know, powerful way. And the way that she sort of behaves in the shower, she's almost, you know, she's taking her time. You know, you're watching something you're not really supposed to be watching, first of all. Everything is a little bit off, you know. So you don't really know what's coming, but Hitchcock puts you in a position where you're, in essence, you know, you're expecting something to happen and you just don't really know what that is.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, you have the shot where, you know, you see a lot of negative space, the door opens and the shadowy figure of Mother sort of, you know, appears. And that is, you know, textbook definition of suspense, because we are now seeing something that, that the character, Marion Crane, does not see. We're given information that is not given to the protagonist. Mm. And that's you know, what we call vicarious suspense. We feel for her, and that's Hitchcock at his best.
Yeah. You know? Let's talk a little bit about voyeurism, because, I mean, I'd say this is Hitchcock at his most voyeuristic, and it's such a key component to many of his films. It's something that he liked to play around with. I think he once said, like, the audience should be aware that they're watching a film, and the film should be aware that the audience is watching it. So how does Psycho represent Hitchcock at his peak with this tactic of voyeurism?
Well, I think, you know, voyeurism in Psycho has a number of different layers. You know, on the one hand, you know, I think, you know, Hitchcock himself is the voyeur, certainly to a certain extent. But he also implicates you, the viewer, and forces you to watch. And that happens really from the very first shot, where you've got this sort of bird's eye view, or probably more accurately, fly's eye view of a phoenix, you know, entering the private space of these two characters, you know, again, who just had, you know, it's certainly assumed sex, and so from the get-go, you're essentially the fly on the wall. You get to enter this private space, and you're made essentially a voyeur. And you know, he does the same thing later on when essentially Marion removes herself technically from you know, as the protagonist, and you're now with Norman Bates. You're experiencing with Norman Bates, you're removing the painting of Susanna and the Elders with him. You are peeping through the peephole with him, and you're watching. And so you really have no choice, in a way, you know. And then what Hitchcock does is he punishes you for it. You know, the thing that's amazing about the shower scene is the sort of the multiple point of view of it. You are at once the killer, and you are also experiencing it from, you know, the perspective of Marion Crane. So you're also being killed. You're being punished, you know, for this act of voyeurism that you've been forced into from the get-go. So it's a pretty vicious film on that front.
It's like constant punishment almost.
It is. It is, you know. And it's Hitchcock just really toying with his audience.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what he loved to do.
This is a question I've asked a few people, but I don't think I've ever really gotten a satisfactory answer, not to put you on the spot.
No pressure, man. No pressure.
but like, I, you know, because it's something that I am very interested in, and it's sort of, what is the value of putting your audience in that state of discomfort as a filmmaker? What does it do?
To answer this question, you have to really understand, I think, in this particular case, what Hitchcock was going for. I think for me, his art was to provide emotion. I think his entire career, this is a guy who was interested in giving the kind of emotions to an audience that you would not be able to experience in a day-to-day life. And I think that's how he viewed cinema. You know, I mean, it's a form of escapism in a way, just the way that we're paying $10 to go to, Six Flags and have these kinds of emotions,
right.
You know, when you're on the roller coaster. I think Hitchcock viewed movies as that in some way. And I think that's why he dabbled a lot in, I mean, I think, you know, what you would call melodrama, you know, heightened emotions and heightened tension and heightened cinematic tricks.
Right.
So that, I think, is the value of what Hitchcock brings to the table. And I think that's why he was too often dismissed as an entertainer. And for some reason, there's this sort of weird idea that because you can entertain, you're not an artist. In fact, I would make the exact opposite argument. If you can entertain and connect with an audience on this very simple, basic, visceral level and give them a good time, but then if that audience can come back over and over again and keep watching those pieces and get something new each time,
That is
great art, you know? And I think it took a long time for people to really realize that Hitchcock was an accessible filmmaker who, again, was able to provide, you know, to make his audience emote in a very powerful way. But at the same time, the more you watch and deconstruct his movies, the more you're going to realize that they're extraordinarily layered and detailed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very hard thing to do.
I mean, I don't think there's been anyone since Hitchcock who's really been able to
do it. I agree.
So what does Psycho mean to you in that sense? Like, what when you watch it, what sort of emotional response do you have to it?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, I can't say that it was easy to spend, you know, 3 years in that shower, as it were, because it's a really intense, you know, sort of piece to watch over and over and over again. The thing that's amazing to me is that, you know, I keep watching Psycho now. I'm actually not, by the way, I'm not done with the shower scene. I'm working on a book. I'm working on, I will probably make another film down the road about the shower scene, believe it or not.
Amazing.
So it's something that I could study for the rest of my life, even though it's not, I don't just want to do that, you know, but there's so much more to say. There's, you know, it's a scene that once you crack it open, there's really no bottom. You know, and that's the thing that fascinates me and that makes me go back to it. And what it means to me is that it's a constant source of inspiration and learning because, again, by looking at that very narrow sort of, you know, 2 minutes, it makes me think not just about Hitchcock, not just about cinema, but about the creative process in new ways. And look, it is so... It runs so deep, the layers of meaning, of imagery, the motifs in that scene, the way that it has a dialogue with other movies in Hitchcock's, you know, filmography, makes it this thing that is absolutely fascinating. It's you know, there's not a single time really that I don't watch Psycho and don't learn something new. You know what I mean? So and it's amazing to me sometimes the things that you notice that you never paid attention to before. And you know, and here you are watching Psycho for, you know, the 300th time, and then you go, oh my God, he's doing this, and I never caught that before. You know, it's marvelous.
When you were going through these interviews, were there things that, you know, struck you about other people's experiences watching Psycho, like these famous director or like horror directors like Eli Roth, who else was included in
it? We got Elijah Wood, Peter Bogdanovich, you know, Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, Guillermo. Right.
Yeah, Walter Murch. Yeah. I mean, God, you know. We got a good cast.
Yeah.
So you're talking about their first experience.
Yeah, did they vary in experience a lot, did you find, or were people sort of affected in the same way?
I think they were, you know, everybody seems to really have had this very strong kind of reaction to the film, you know, watching it for the first time. At least those who sort of watched it when they were young, you know. I personally, I don't really have a first memory of watching Psycho
when was the first time? Do you remember?
I was very young. I mean, my dad was watching Hitchcock films. I mean, you know, there were really two things that I remember sort of, you know, watching over and over again, just because they were around. It was Hitchcock films and Columbo. you know, like that was, my dad was into those two things, you know, so they were always around since I was a very, you know, a young kid. So strangely enough, I don't have that memory of watching, in fact, any Hitchcock film for the first time. It feels to me like they were always there.
You were like born with it and still in your mind. Yeah.
Yeah, probably, you know, something like that. Yeah. So, you know, but I do remember wanting to watch them. Uh-huh. Over and over again. And I remember that there was a point where I think I was about 12 years old, actually, and I had this it was kind of a like a salon series, if you want to call it that, where every Sunday I would have my parents and their friends.
You were 12.
I was 12.
Yeah.
And we'd watch a Hitchcock film on VHS, and I would do a little intro. We'd have a Q&A.
It's great.
It's cool.
Yeah.
You know, but so and here, you know, and I'm still doing this now.
Yeah.
So clearly I haven't changed that much, you know.
Did you find anything, like, what was your the most interesting factoid about Psycho or about the shower scene that you learned in the process of making this film?
Well, you know, I think there were certain things that I wanted to investigate that I felt had really not been investigated at all. One of the stories that I had a whole lot of fun working on was the sound of the knife striking flesh. Yeah. The story goes that Hitchcock obviously had a number of melons brought on set, and he had his eyes closed while they were stabbing all these different melons, and he just said one word. He said cassava, and so he basically picked the cassava melon, which is a Mexican melon, to create that sound. And so, so I really went on this fun, crazy journey to figure out, or at least speculate, why the cassava versus any other melon? You know, is this just Hitchcock being Hitchcock, or does the cassava really sound, distinctly different from the other melons? So we rounded up 27 varieties of melons in season, which I'll tell you right now is a very difficult thing to do.
I mean, that's a lot of melons.
It's a lot of melons, and from a lot of specialty markets, from a lot of different corners of the world, and a lot of most of those kind of specialty melons, you can't just order one; you have to order a case. So we had I think roughly 220 melons on the set that day. And we stabbed them all and recorded each one very specifically. And then I sent those sound files to Gary Rydstrom, who, seven-time Academy Award winner, wow. A sound, giant.
Right.
And Shannon Mills, also an amazing sound designer and re-recording mixer, who work at, Skywalker in
Marin County,
Northern California. Yep. And I sent him the files, and I said, so we obviously agreed to an interview, and I really wanted to get from their perspective, why the cassava, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to give it away here,
don't give it away.
But it's a really cool theory, and I actually, it's funny because the thing that struck me, and I'm not a sound guy, but before I even gave them the files, when I was listening, it's like there's no question that the cassava sounds different. It sounds like a crazy thing to say, but it really has a very different sound.
Did all the other melons sound the same in terms of?
No. I mean, there's very slight differences. Some that I probably then, there's a point where if you're not a sound expert, you're gonna not get those details.
Right.
But the cassava versus every other melon, definitely.
I mean, it's
definitely
a visceral reaction that you can have to the sound of this.
Oh yeah,
it's crazy. I mean, it's just another one of the many examples of the way that Hitchcock is able to get those visceral mm-hmm. sort of feelings out of you.
And it shows you what kind of filmmaker he is. That the guy is so detail oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Everything matters in his film. So, it's pretty special, to see artists, to me, it's like, no wonder we're still talking about Hitchcock. No wonder he's the most celebrated and discussed filmmaker of all time, because this is a guy who was really thinking about everything.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, there's foreshadowing all over the place in this movie,
God.
Which is another thing that I learned from your doc. It's man, he's foreshadowing for Psycho in like North by Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
He's thought of these things his entire career, and he builds upon them in his canon.
That's right.
Insane.
That's what I'm saying is there's a real dialogue. There's a real sort of this idea that he will set up an idea and then it'll pay off 20 years later.
Yeah.
You look at his entire body of work, and you have all these bright white tiled Victorian bathrooms that are set up in a way, and then he defiles it in Psycho. But before that, in 1954, he sort of warns you about it, because you're in Rear Window, you're watching, mm-hmm. The killer just, you know, washing, cleaning the bathroom walls, and you know, and they're saying, you know, it must have splattered a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so it's almost like he prepares you for this idea.
We get to see it.
He teases you, and then wham, he just gives it to you, and in a way, he doesn't apologize for it. It's like, well, I kind of warned you, didn't I?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Vimeo Live is the latest innovation from our favorite video hosting platform. Now, you simply don't have to worry about running a low-quality live stream ever again. With Vimeo Live, you get pristine quality across all devices. You can broadcast your live events in full HD 1080p and enjoy built-in cloud transcoding so your viewers can watch in stunning high quality, perfectly fit for their device and bandwidth. You're also sure to breathe easy thanks to reliable features and more controls. Share securely with privacy options, enjoy live chat support, and get more flexibility with RTMP without hidden overage charges. What's more, you can engage your audience from anywhere, embed the player wherever you choose, see who's attending your event by enabling email capture in the player, turn on live chat, and view live and archive stats to track performance. Finally, Vimeo Live allows you to have one home for all your video needs. Get the best of Vimeo across your workflow for live and recorded videos. Manage and store in one place, replace archived videos with files in up to 4K, create review pages, and more. In an offer exclusive to the No Film School podcast listeners, Vimeo is offering 10% off Live Pro or Live Business accounts. Sign up using the promo code NFSLIVE. This discount offer expires 12/31/2017, is limited to one use per person, may not be combined with other offers, and will be applied to the first year of your subscription, after which time your subscription will automatically renew at the regular retail price each year until you cancel. Another thing that fascinated me was that he kind of said that this film was a joke in the beginning.
Right.
So wait, can you explain that to me? Because that was kind of confusing to me.
Well, but that's exactly what he wants you to feel like.
Okay.
You know, I there's no doubt in my mind that Psycho was anything but a joke for Hitchcock. I think that he obviously loved to toy with his audience. You know, he loved to just pull their leg. I think Psycho really meant a lot for him. I mean, look, he was 61 years old. He had nothing to prove. And he could have, you know, gone on making those, you know, huge sort of Technicolor, you know, films for the rest of his life, and he would still be the celebrated filmmaker, you know, today that we know. But he took a massive risk, and I think that this is evidence that he was interested in pushing the envelope. He was interested in never. Sort of, you know, resting on his laurels, as it were, and just wanted to keep trying something new. And, you know, this was a movie that nobody wanted to finance, nobody wanted to get behind, and people were basically telling him, it's just beneath you, mm-hmm. you know, to do this. But he saw that opportunity. He saw that extraordinary opportunity by, you know, reading the book by Robert Bloch, saw that the shower scene, I think, well, you know, that's the reason why he made the film. I mean, reportedly, and there I actually believe him when he said, you know, that it was the murder in the bathtub and that's it. That's the only reason why he wanted to make this. I believe that.
Well, he shot it separately from the rest of the film, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And it took him 7 days, which, you know.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, nobody does that.
It's crazy.
Right?
Yeah,
it's completely nuts, you know. But it shows you that it meant something to him.
Yeah.
There's no question that it was no joke,
you
know, for Hitchcock to, you know, to make this film. And that I think that he basically sort of went all in because I do believe that he saw an opportunity to, you know, to create his grandest cinematic trick, to shock audiences completely out of their minds. And he took a massive gamble by doing that.
Yeah.
You know, it could have failed. It could have really flopped. But boy, did it work.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So we haven't really explained the film's title at all. So before we wrap up here, 7852, why is it called that?
So the scene has 78 setups, camera setups, and ultimately 52 cuts. So there were a number of setups, obviously, that were not used. And unfortunately, because all of the, you know, all of that footage has been burned, you know, destroyed, we'll never know.
Yeah.
It's a real tragedy. You know?
How did that happen? Was it Hitchcock who did that himself?
No, it was some kind of, you know, PA, some kind of assistant who, it's just one of those sort of heartbreaking stories. You know, on the other hand, I think it adds a certain amount of mystery.
Yeah.
Again, you know, around the shower scene, but there are no outtakes left. The only thing that's left is actually 5 frames from the shot that he didn't use of this kind of tragic, you know, overhead shot of you know, the Marley buck naked sort of wrapped around the tub.
Yeah.
You know, you can see her, you know, her butt. And
like,
yeah,
a very sexual position too.
Yeah, very tragic and sexual and
maybe,
you know,
a little too much for...
Oh, for the time, yeah. Yeah. I think it's pretty clear when you look at those frames, you know, why he wasn't able to, you know, to use that shot. I think that one would not have gone past censorship.
No. No. You know? And we see those frames in your film, though.
No, actually, I unfortunately found them. I discovered, well, you see the footage from the Gus Van Sant, who,
yes,
actually... he used that,
yes,
shot,
yes,
in his version of the film, but the actual frames, no, I actually discovered them too late.
Oh no.
yeah. Well, you know, that's what it is. Like I said, it's endless.
The sequel, you know.
There you go. 1753. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, great. Just a last question. I like to ask this to all of our visiting directors.
Yeah.
If you had one nugget of advice for aspiring documentarians, in your case, who are trying to get their documentary off the ground, trying to find a story that resonates with them as much as Psycho and this shower scene resonates with you,
right,
what would you say to them?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, the first step obviously is to do something that really resonates with you and that you're really going to be, you know, I think there needs to be a certain kind of necessity. To make a movie, because, you know, making movies it's really hard. And I think you need to wake up every day, you know, feeling energized and feeling like, you know, this is something that, no matter what kind of obstacles you're going to encounter along the way, that you're going to see, you know, get the job done. But, you know, I think another advice is making sure that, you know, don't wait for somebody to just give you $1 million to do it.
Right.
You know, it might take a while. You might have to do a sizzle reel. You might have to do whatever it takes. So I always make sure that, you know, I convey the impression that the train is leaving the station, so to speak, and you know, gaining speed. And it's like, well, okay, you want to be a part of this film, then you might, you know, you should probably jump on board now, because,
right,
you know, we're going.
Yeah.
And so you have to sort of exude that sense of confidence, I think, that you're not going to wait around for people to make up their minds.
Yeah, that's great advice.
You know?
That necessity that you're talking about, that's not necessarily a necessity for like a world issue. It's just a necessity for you, right? A personal.
Oh, completely. Decision. Yeah. No. It's and if it's both, you know, great. But,
yeah,
you know, I for me, it is a necessity for me. It is because I'm extremely, you know, passionate about, you know, pop culture and cinema and making people sort of look at those important moments in film, you know, through a different lens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fully committed to that idea. I think that, you know, again, I've been dismissed, you know, as a pop culture documentarian, you know, not just because, you know, of what I do necessarily, but I think pop culture gets dismissed in, you know, generally.
Yeah.
I think pop culture is extraordinarily important.
Yeah.
You know, it says something about who we are, and I think we need to look at it and study it. That's my mission. And I think that, you know, I'm really glad to see that pop culture, you know, over the whatever past, you know, 12, 13 years since I've been making these films, is getting more of a, more respect, you know, more people are starting to pay, you know, more attention. I still think there's a lot of work to be done, obviously, but I think we're getting there. I think people are starting to realize that there's great, you know, that it's really worthy of our attention.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great educational tool for artists, you know, just seeing what transpired in the past to make these works of pop culture so successful.
Yeah.
Great. Well, so the movie comes out Friday, October 13th?
I believe, yeah. And it's going to roll into different, you know, theaters around the country at slightly different dates, but it's also going to be on iTunes, I believe.
Great.
And, you know, eventually we'll have, you know, DVD, Blu-ray. That's in March. Then it'll be on Hulu, I just heard, you know, after that, probably more like May 2018. So there's a lot of different opportunities, you know, to watch the film. But I would encourage people who are film buffs to come and see this on the big screen, because it is really a film made for the big screen. I mean, we went to great lengths to make it as cinematic as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be a much more satisfying experience.
Great. You know, yeah. So. And see Psycho before it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's actually, you know, it's interesting because there's a lot of people who have, you know, who come to the screenings and who've never watched Psycho.
Yeah.
And that really kind of blows my mind. And it's kind of cool because it shows that there's interest there. There's curiosity about the shower scene. But then, of course, you know, after watching 7852, I think the first thing they're going to do is go watch Psycho again, you know. So yeah, there's no right or wrong way to do it.
You're really doing Alfred Hitchcock a service here by getting more people to want to watch Psycho.
Well, I hope so, you know, but I would say in being true to Hitch here, you know, just whoever comes to see 7852 in theater should come and make sure that they're here on time to watch it from the beginning.
Absolutely.
It's the only way.
Great. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
Check out the movie for sure. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, please subscribe on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you use. If you really like us, go hit us up with a 5-star rating on iTunes. And just a reminder, we will not be doing any Film Weekly this week as I am absent from Brooklyn. But you can stay tuned for another interview podcast next Monday. I'm John Fusco. You can follow me on Twitter at @Jim_John_Jim. Have a great Halloween. And watch Psycho and this movie.